recording.
I call to order this meeting of the Cameron Park Community Services District's Fire Committee. Mark, could you call the roll?
Okay, Director Bissett.
Present.
Director Israel.
Here.
All right, we are all here.
All right, adoption of the agenda. Any comments on the agenda from the public?
It's long.
And Sid, any?
I've reviewed it. I move that we accept the agenda as written.
All right, I'll second that. In favor?
Aye.
Yes. All right. Approval of the minutes. It's been so long since we...
Yeah. I did look at it. It all seemed vaguely familiar. It was like, what, 3 months ago? When was it? February? Whatever it was?
It's been 4 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of our memories don't go back that far. Okay.
I have no comment.
Okay, then I move that we accept the minutes from the previous meeting.
And I'll second that.
All in favor say aye.
Or no? Aye.
Aye. Okay, we did
all
it.
All right. Okay. Open forum for the public. Anybody wish to make comment that's not on the agenda?
Bradley Ball and Kim report. Hell of rescue on 50th Ice House, huh?
Yep.
Unbelievable how that car left the page. Congrats, guys.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments? All right. With that being said, we will move on to department matters. Mark, RFP.
Okay, so I'm bringing forward for your consideration and approval to move to the full board. We need to go out for RFP for fire prevention, inspection, and plan review services.
We currently have a contract with someone on that, do we?
We have a contract. It was not written extremely well. It was a contract for a specific set of actions, which technically they're ongoing, so the contract is not done. However, there was no term of that contract. It was until the services were completed. So that we are very transparent and that we have good, solid agreements, I would like to go out on an RFP. Also, just to get other companies that might be doing the same service so that we're making sure we're good custodians of the district's money. And in that contract, I believe, like we did with the landscaping, we need to do a multi-year contract with renewals. The appropriate terms and termination and all that need to be part of that contract. But the scope of services will be the same as what we are currently utilizing. However, it could be anticipated that there might be other services offered by the responding firms. I was going to have Chief Callan Richards pine in. I don't know if there's anything that I have missed on this.
Nope. So Callan and I have talked about this. I've been part of this for a while. So when we did the reduction of one battalion chief, which was our fire marshal here in Cameron Park, that's when we went out to contract services. It did not go to RFP at the time. It went to a sole bid, which was InterWest Consulting. There was a do not exceed on there, and at the time, the way that it was structured is that the reimbursement would count, and basically it kept below the do not exceed. So we haven't had any issues with InterWest Consulting at this point. They've been providing all of the tasks that we asked them to do, our plan reviews, and they're also doing all the state-mandated inspections that we reported out January or February at our meeting. We did have the discussion about looking to go out. There are other companies out there that provide similar services, and Callan talking with Mark, is it at the time it really wasn't done probably the most appropriate way, and it's time for us to re-put the services out there and see what else is out there that can meet our needs of performing our fire, a lot of the tasks of the fire marshal. Cameron Park, Callan will still have to do the final sign-off. A private entity can't do the final sign-off on all of our plans, but they will do all the plan reviews, the plan checks, the comments, and and then Callan will have to do the final sign-off on it. But quite frankly, we just don't have, within the fire department, the bandwidth to do the services that they're doing. And then as we get into state mandated inspections, as prior meetings we had, we fell short on meeting that. And so this year, the goal is to ensure that we hit all of our state mandated. And that's part of it. Are there other companies out that may have a little more bandwidth to do more inspections or not? And so that's really why you're seeing this today. We'd like to take it out to RFP, see what the responses are. I think Mark and Callan put together a pretty good RFP looking at it with good scoring criteria. So then we can look at negotiating a contract for a multi-year and be a lot more transparent.
Question. So the cost of this contract, is it largely covered by the charges on the inspections?
Yes.
Is it kind of a zero balance on it, kind of, or is the CSD covering some of this cost?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a zero cost. So for the plan review, 100%. They don't get their plans until they pay. Right, where the other piece of that is are on those state mandated inspections. They don't ask us to show up. We show up as part of our mandate to do the inspection, and then we have to bill for them and then go through and get the reimbursement on that. Plan review and those inspections, 100%. They need something from us, and they don't get what they need from us until they pay the fire prevention fees. But the inspections are the ones that we need to get caught up on billing and recovery on that.
Yeah, and I know we were planning on that. And then the last question is that expanding? Are there more expectations of those inspections, or is it just not really?
Okay. It's not expanding. It ebbs and flows. When we have tenant improvements to in structures, any new construction, those all have to be planned submittals and then have to go through the plan check to make sure it meets.
Okay, that's all I have. Thanks.
But to your point, there is no cost to the district. They have a fee. We pay them, but our costs are completely, it completely covers that.
We're reimbursed or whatever.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we're reimbursed with an admin fee.
There's an admin fee
on top of
that we have.
Yes.
Okay. On top of that. Okay. To cover our costs to do all this.
That's correct. Right.
Okay, thank you.
What's the annual budget or what we anticipate the value of the contract to be?
Well, the contract was written not to exceed at $25,000. I don't know. Like I might have it here. If I pull fire. So the annual budget for fire marshal services was budgeted at $70,000. Year to date, we're into it at $55,000.
So what would the contract amount be then?
So what would the contract value be, well, per year and total value?
Well, if we do it based on an annual budget, it would be about a $70,000
Are you going to state what our budget is in the RFP?
That's a good question, because sometimes you don't want to lead the witness.
Well, all they have to do is look at our budget.
They'd have to look at the budget, yeah. We did not do that for landscaping, and we got a wide array of responses.
And then, in what term do you anticipate awarding this for? Three years, one year?
I would do it. In my background of contracts, I like 3 years.
Okay.
With one or two optional one-year extensions.
Okay, I like that too.
And 90-day rights of termination by either party. Obviously, if there's a breach, it's immediate.
Okay. And then my other question is, does this need to go to the board? As an RFP, does it need to go?
I believe it does need to go to the board, because we're going to be, the hope is at the end of this we have a contract.
But the board would approve the contract.
The board would approve the contract.
But do we need to approve the RFP? I mean, I appreciate you bringing it to us, but in my opinion, we wouldn't really need to take this to the board, because it's just an RFP. I mean, you may get proposals and decide, we don't want to do this.
I guess it's not written in policy that I'm aware of, as good practice of being transparent. I guess it's at the pleasure of the board whether we do it. And as a committee, you could give guidance, I believe, to just go do it. And then I would report back to the board of, you know, the award and the contract.
Okay, well, I'll reserve my comment until I hear from the public. Any other questions?
Not for me.
All right, turn
Tim,
this out.
The only thing I have is when we went through this initially, your question of what is the contract about? Uh-huh. So that was one of the things that we struggled a lot with this, because it's based off of the number of submittals that we get, how many inspections they get done, and then trying to really quantify, okay, yes, we paid out, say, $70,000, but then we get reimbursed $74,000.
Well, it's still a contract for $74,000, though, right? I mean, it's a contract no matter what. And there are limits to what the general manager can sign, and then it has to come to the board, especially for a multi-year contract, right?
I just have one more question then. We knew that we were doing catch-up. Is this budget amount enough to do 100% of what we're obligated to do?
Well, it depends on... one of the things it depends on is when we get those RFPs back is what is their cost for inspection.
So we don't know that until they come in?
They come in. Then we'll know what their per-hour cost is.
Right.
If it's more than what we currently have in our fee schedule, then we got to deal with that on top of that. I feel that we have it. The last fee schedule we did, we're going to be in the ballpark, because most of all the companies are about the same price per hour, and I think we have that covered in there. But you never really know until you get it, and then we can do the math on it and say, okay, we've got this many mandated inspections. It's about an hour inspection, and we can figure that out.
So, to my question, we're doing catch-up. Do you anticipate this is a budget that will cover getting completely compliant on this?
I think so at 70, but once we see the numbers, we'll be able to tell you.
We just don't know at this point. Okay.
Yeah. Remembering Chief Richards' presentation, the ones where we were behind were in, I believe they were multi-unit residentials. And there weren't that many of them. But again, it goes back to what's the fee per inspection and how many of those we have to do. I wouldn't. But again, then if we get a whole lot of other new requests for other building plans and all that, then it might go up. Difficult to guess to me.
I think we're mixing the two, though, right? Your state mandated inspections, 100%, yes, the budget will cover that.
Right.
This is all the other development that comes in. That's what drives your costs up. That budget's going to far, far, far exceed what you're going to spend on state-mandated inspections. You're good with that. It's everything else, the new development, the annual inspections, those other things. But your state mandates, yes, you'll be able to get caught up on that, no problem.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
All right, we'll take it out to the public for comment.
Mo Johnson, your consultant. For the RFP process, I think the process, it's definitely well needed, for sure. As for the process itself, the RFP, I think Mark's intent really was just to be transparent. Hey, we're going out to RFP. Mm-hmm. I think in the future, that could probably just be an update from the GM. We're going out to RFP to award the RFP. That's when it comes back to the board, contract, and all that.
Thank you.
Any other comments? All right, bringing it back for any further discussion.
Nothing further, thank you.
Well, I would suggest that we don't need to bring this to the board for the board's approval. It just take up more time in our meetings, which we all are sensitive to that. mention in the fire report or in the general manager's report somewhere in the proceedings is appropriate, and I would agree with that. But for most, in my experience at least, RFPs are staff work And as a board, I mean, as long as we're communicating, I don't think we need to approve the RFPs. It's the contract that really is the big thing.
Okay.
Unless it's some super sensitive thing that we're dealing with. But this is pretty straightforward. So,
yeah.
So with that said, Sid,
do we need to move to make this go?
Well, we don't want to. I would suggest we don't send it to the board, but
I actually concur with you on that. So, is it a? Do we need to make a motion to approve this for the RFP?
I think it's simple providing direction to staff.
So it's under purview of the GM.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
I think there's a concurrence here then.
Okay.
Duly noted, as I say.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Item number two: the Silver Springs Unit 2 and 3 development.
I'm going to apologize for all the number of pages of documents, but there's a lot. So this is not meant to be a deep dive. This is really just meant to give you an overview because it's super fresh. In fact, our first meeting with our partners are tomorrow morning. So with that being said, Silver Springs 2 and 3 development is located in portions of Cameron Park Community Services District for parks, recreation, and solid waste only. It's in a rescue fire district for fire protection. So we've got this interesting multi-jurisdictional dilemma that we have to deal with.
Mo, could you just, and our status, eventually that would get annexed into us or no?
No.
Silver Springs is not.
No. So for here on in perpetuity, we will only ever, because that's when LAFCO years ago split it to where you can give a jurisdiction a portion of the authority and give another jurisdiction another portion. They did that many years ago, and we have that in a couple different places in our district, both on the north side and the south side of County Fire. We have the same exact problem down there. So it's ours for parks, recreation, solid waste, CCNRs, LLADs. It's right. Theirs 100% for fire.
So, and then what areas were we talking about annexing in to that?
So the areas that we were talking about annexing in, there's some areas off Meter Road over there. There's
right.
also some areas in this same area that
right.
need to be annexed in, but these are already in the district. So these are outside
okay.
of that footprint
right.
and they need to be annexed in.
And are they part of Eldorado Hills?
They are not part of Eldorado. None of these are part
are
of Eldorado
county?
Hills.
What are they?
They are a rescue fire district.
Okay.
And then it's our district for parks, recreation, solid waste.
Are they considered part of Cameron Park CSD?
Only for parks and recreation.
Only for parks
and recreation.
We have two
yes.
different districts.
It's a mix.
No, I understand this. So, they're, yeah, okay.
So you have both of us. And so that's the problem. The developer, a number of years ago, and you have the document in your packet, they actually drafted CCNRs and somebody signed off on them in 2006. So in 2006, that document really indicates or it alludes to the fact that, hey, at close to build out, we're going to basically give the property, the open space, to the CSD. Well, I will argue that maybe the district doesn't want that because it also talks about you having to maintain that open space. And as you look at that, and we'll have a full presentation for you, maps and all that, there are probably about 30 homes that back up to this open space, which means you're going to get a phone call from every single one of those property owners to maintain that. There's also no means to provide funding for this, as they are not proposing a HOA in this development. We've got the CCNR responsibilities, ARC responsibilities, but we do not have any means to collect for the fireside, nor do we have jurisdiction that's rescue. So that's what our meeting tomorrow is hey, how do we work together? It might come out that we say, hey, this is yours. Here you go. The other complicating factor is they are going for what we call an IBHS. It's a wildfire prepared neighborhood. This will be the third neighborhood designation they're going for. This is going to continue to occur. So Lime Rock, Bravo Valley, I'm certain they're going to go for it. KB Homes, they're going for that designation down there. There was just a presentation down there as well. Southern California was actually the first one, I think, in the Palisades area. So these are going to continue to occur. I think it's helping them with insurance or making them more insurable. So that's why this conversation is not just a singular focus. It's going to be a multi-focus because it's going to occur again. With that being said, the CCNRs treat the open space like conservation areas. The document that was provided by the developer puts a lot of things on the CSD, and that's not going to work for us. So a lot of it had to do with not only the open space, it also mentioned that we were responsible for annual inspections of the every single residential property. It also said that we were responsible for maintaining the common spaces within the entire development, and so that's just not feasible, especially since there's no revenue stream. Now, to the good news, they did say, hey, we're willing to pay. I'm like, perfect. How much? They go, well, you need to tell us how much you need. I'm like, okay, well, we need to find out, well, what is the cost of the IBHS annual recertification? What does that cost? What's it going to cost for an inspector? And, oh, by the way, again, we have no fire jurisdiction.
Well, why would we take on that responsibility?
Because we're not fired.
We don't disagree.
I mean, yeah. Okay, I could see maybe, yeah.
We don't all disagree. We just need to get that out of our documents and make sure Rescue has that. That's what I'm telling you on that. Yeah. And so it's ownership versus responsibility. We're still trying to track down, is there a deed or something that says it's going to be deeded to us? And then we need to make the decision. I don't know that you want the open space property. I will tell you, in every development that I've been part of with open space, ownership's been an issue, and typically it's an absent owner, and you get all these phone calls, and there's no way to mitigate it. So I will be careful just taking that without having some kind of funding mechanism in perpetuity. That's where we're really at with that. CC&Rs, we're going to have to probably modify that document because there are some things in there that I think are an exposure to the district, but again, it was written in 2006, and that is the synopsis. It's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, if I just a little bit. So the LLAD, these developments where they want to do this, is encompassed in the original LLAD formation document. However, none of this, back at the time of 2006 or whatever, was contemplated in that LLAD formation document. So they would have to, and they're the developers, so they get the parcel owner, so they can vote themselves this thing. Mm-hmm. They would have to vote an addendum or a different LLAD document that would then have all these provisions. So it's not a simple thing to do. Okay. Our LLAD document is pretty much limited to one of the open space up at the corner that has the cemetery there, and then just all the streetscape. That's what currently we were set up and anticipating to do.
And there's funding coming for that.
There is funding. That's the LLAD assessment covers all of that, and we're building up that reserve account. But this would be a whole other kettle of fish, not even covered by that original document.
Sid, do you have more questions?
You know, I did notice something that caught my attention under the Levine Act statement on Attachment 1A. It referred to having conflict of interest, but it was El Dorado Hills Community Service District.
You're talking about the last item.
It was it? Did I miss it?
1A is.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry.
And what, I stole that.
It's a typo. Anyway, yeah, I'm sorry. Wrong document.
I said, not yeah. That.
Didn't get that deep.
Yeah. I've never seen such extensive HOA CC&Rs. Wow. Yeah, I'm wary of that. That's all my comment.
I don't have any additional questions. It sounds like there'll be some more answers soon.
Yes, I would say the only complicating factor is, much like anything developers do, they don't give you a lot of time. So I got a phone call last week. Oh, by the way, we're selling homes starting Monday, and we need it, which was this last Monday. And we need to tell the owners how much it's going to cost them. I go, well, that's not our fault. So,
yeah. All right, move this out to the public. Any comments?
Redneck Bowling Camera Park. I guess I concur that all those issues need resolution beforehand. I guess historically, what has the district agreed to when the annexation took place? And I don't have those answers.
Right.
So that's all I got.
Further comment, Vicki?
Yeah, this is way beyond my understanding of all these processes. But anyway. is there any way we could just not have any more LLADs in this district? I mean, it seems like it causes this district an enormous amount of problems. You know, staffing time and just we don't have the money and the people who buy the houses never want to pay anymore. And is there anything that we can push back onto somebody else in this whole sphere of LLAD-dom?
That's actually one of the better $100 years.
It is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't care so much.
We won't touch that one.
Okay.
No one's saying anything about
that. All right. Very good.
They're doing all right.
Any further comments?
This is so complex. You should be talking to Jill Ritzman about that Silver Springs whole deal. She's the one who, I think, was instrumental. And I just can't... Why would we even want to get involved in something like this when we're not getting all the property tax? I mean, if it was our area, you know? To me, I mean, this is something, if I understand what I read today, the developer brought forward. Was that right, Roland?
Yeah, the developer brought the IBHS wildfire prepared neighborhood component forward. However, the CCNRs and all those other documents, that's been in there since 2006. So we're only involved because our name's on a lot of documents that talks about the open space and things like that. Yeah. That's why we're involved.
I don't know.
Good luck,
Will.
Thanks.
Crazy.
All right.
My question is the IBHS. Is that why there's all that extensive information about defensible space,
yes,
physically?
Yeah,
that's the criteria that they're looking
correct.
For?
Correct. So in your package, you have the wildfire prepared neighborhood technical standard.
Yeah.
That is what we would be, we agreed to this, that's what the standard has to be.
We agreed to that standard?
We did not agree to
anything. No, if we were to.
Okay.
And so I would say the other document to look at is a wildland urban interface fire protection plan. That is nothing to do with us, but CAL FIRE and Rescue, they signed off on that. So we've got a meeting set up with Jeff Hogue and I think Chief Pooley.
Brian Pooley.
Is he Chief? Chief Pooley? We're setting a meeting up with them to sit down and walk through the whole thing. So we'll have more information for you here soon.
Is this where it's heading in the future for any new 100%. Development?
Yes. Yes. Anywhere
in the same element.
Yes.
Wow.
That's why it's odd that you have parks, recreation, solid waste, and fire separate, usually just like one entity. That's why this is so complicated.
Right. Wow. It's just way beyond the scope of what we've previously looked at.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if there was an HOA, we can just say here, but there's not.
Yeah.
Right.
Boy, good luck tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I would I would support the position that, look, this is, we're not fire there. That's not our problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Rescue's responsibility. And as far as your open space, we don't want it. We've got open space that we have to maintain. It's unusable.
Right, right.
Unless you want to pay us a whole bunch of money to maintain it, and I mean... an exorbitant amount of money,
yeah.
Right? I mean, twice as much as we think we need, because right. God knows you're not going to be able to get one penny out of these people in the future once those houses are
gone. They're gone. Right. Once they're gone, they're gone.
Right. So I would support pushing this on to Rescue. It's their problem. It's their tax base. It's their deal. As far as the CCNRs and our LLADs, I mean, that's our job. That's our area. It's our responsibility, I get that. But that's not take on something where we're not the authority. That's craziness.
And my comment is, I don't know how in the world Rescue could pull this off. I really don't.
You're going to hire somebody. I mean, that's what they have to do. That's what we would have.
Yeah. We'll contract somebody.
They've agreed to it,
pretty much. I'd be the one responsible for having to do this.
Oh, for the camera part?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think they're supposed to be putting like 180 homes in that area.
Wow.
So what they told us is that IBHS has something set up online for the homeowner to like annually update things. But
Yeah, you'd have to gain access to do a full inspection.
All the way around the house, too.
All the way around the house, looking to that document on everything.
They're going to need a team of people to pull that off.
Yeah, because I think about that, and I'm like, that would take a lot of time to go through and check everything off.
Yeah.
So,
we'd be foolish to take that on. So unless there's a large amount of money.
Well,
just the volume of headaches dealing with every individual resident.
If they put a shed next to their house.
Well, we would do that because that does fall under us.
But it's a small shed up against the house.
It's
not less than 10 by 10.
And you can't do it.
But how are you going to get them to move it? I mean, that's somebody else's problem, not ours.
There was a big section on ADUs, too.
Yes, that was very well called out in the ADU, so we will have to pay attention to that.
And that whole area, it would affect all their insurance.
Absolutely.
Too. That's the whole big thing with IDHS, where they're getting the whole neighborhood gets this designation, they get all insured. If one person messes up, it messes
they
up.
Lose it all.
The entire neighborhood. Yeah.
So that's like the homeowner when they move in, they did a KB presentation. They're literally given a packet and be like, this is what you have to follow.
Yep.
So, nothing
can
go wrong.
Yeah, and KB's gone.
KB's out.
Yeah.
It was a great marketing scheme.
Yeah.
All right, on to item number 3, new logo for Cameron Park Fire Apparatus.
So I'll continue since Callan got here, but I'll continue. If you look in your packet, you've got the second logo with the Cameron Park Fire Department patch and the Cal Fire logo. That's what's currently on all of our equipment. The Cameron Park Fire Department was formed in 1969. The logo, I believe, was somewhat shortly thereafter that, from the best that I can do the research. All the equipment has always had the Cameron Park Fire Department logo. We started this discussion with Mo and Mark a while ago as we were purchasing the new Type 3 fire engine of what did we want to put on the door shield of the apparatus. So our proposals, what you see in the packet is the first logo with the Community Service District logo with paired up with the Cal Fire logo. Internally we've had a lot of discussions because really the only place that the Cameron Park Fire Department patch lives is with our resident firefighter program and on our pieces of equipment. However, I don't think that it appropriate represents the partnership between Cal Fire and the Cameron Park Community Services District. So we're coming to you for your thoughts to see about initially with the brand new engine that showed up that doesn't have any decals, putting this new logo on the current new fire engine to better represent our partnership. The CSD is the one that ultimately governs the fire department, and it's been the Cameron Park Fire Patch has been more of a symbology to the initial creation of the fire department, but it doesn't really represent today's fire service nor what we have today. The rest of the equipment, as the budget will allow, then we will slowly switch over the other equipment, but we are not just going to go wholesale change all the decals until we can fiscally do that appropriately. There's nothing wrong with them on the current apparatus. They're not faded, none of that. So that'll be Callan and Mark working together in the future, but looking for your support to move away from the Cameron Park Fire Department logo and go to the dual stacked Cameron Park CSD logo with the Cal Fire logo on the door.
Is it the second one that you wanted to change to?
It's the one.
Not the round
this
one.
This is the current one.
Okay. The round patch and then the other one, the same shape. Okay.
The CSD logo.
Okay.
Did you have discussions with any old timers?
We have. We've had some of these discussions with some of the folks that have been around a long time, and they were not necessarily going to be heartbroken, and they understand it changes. Some of the responses we got back is, I'm surprised you haven't changed the logo to this point, and that we've kept it.
Any other questions.
The funny one was the color of the fire engine, which is red instead of white, but I understood the reason is that when you go to sell it, it's probably easier to sell a red fire engine than a white fire engine. I like seeing both. I like the combination. There's a pride thing that you're part of Cameron Park, but you're also Cal Fire. So I think he acknowledges both. I like the idea.
Any other questions?
Nope, nothing.
To the public, any comments?
I never saw any reason to change it. That's just my opinion, you know.
So. Okay. Any other comments?
Nothing.
Mo Johnson Rescue. I think it's very consistent when you look up and down the state with the CAL FIRE and their cooperative services agreements. It's the agency having jurisdictions logo with the CAL FIRE logo. This lines it up perfectly with that. I think it's absolutely appropriate.
All right. Any other comments from the public?
Most of our CAL FIRE contracts, if it's a city, it has the city seal with the CAL FIRE patch on it. This is very consistent across the state for us, which is what made it very easy because it is all over the state for us to represent that city, or if it's truly a county, it's the county patch on it.
I kind of like the idea that you're out fighting a fire in whether it's Southern California, wherever. And where are you guys from? Oh, Cameron Park. Where's Cameron Park? Well, you know, it opens that up. Yeah, so, and it speaks well of your crews, really. It's kind of a pride thing.
All right. I guess my major comment on this is I would like to see the Cameron Park logo in the, I guess what you call the superior position. So switch their positioning. But so basically in this, I don't have it up. I have it on my computer. But the CAL FIRE logo's up on top of Cameron. And the reality is, we should be on top of CAL FIRE. You're a contractor for us. So I would like to see Cameron Park on top, CDF on the bottom. That's my opinion.
The reason that most of our agreements have it this way is it's the local government patches in front of CAL FIRE, mm-hmm. right? Not so much above it, but if you switched it, then it eats into the title of CAL FIRE and the California Department of Forestry Department covers the name of, and the bottom doesn't have any writings on it. But
my problem with it is, and this is very much when Cameron Park Fire Department responds to a fire, people say it's CAL FIRE, it's not Cameron Park, and that's true, mm-hmm. but it's sort of true. I mean, the reality is it's Cameron Park Fire Department. And with our contractor, CAL FIRE, who could leave us at some time in the future. Could. I mean, that's a possibility if we don't enact a contract with them. So I guess my point is that Cameron Park is the agency that's hiring a contractor, CDF. We're partners. That's great. But in this layout, it implies CAL FIRE is here and we're down here, and I would like to see that switched.
What's the normal practice across the state? Is there a standard?
I'll go back and pull them up and see.
Could be interesting to see what other.
Yeah,
other
I would play with it and see what you can do.
Yeah.
But the way it is now, it's big brother and little brother, and you know, I would like to see Cameron Park, again, it's just this public, well, again, I don't want to disparage the job CAL FIRE does for us, but we're the ones that pay the bill.
100%.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, that's why we're bringing the patch to it, because right now the Cameron Park Fire Department patch, which is the other one,
yeah, and I don't.
People don't represent that with the CSD really at all.
No, and I don't disagree with that. I mean, I had never even really had a hard look at that patch before. I don't disagree with pushing this out. It's just the positioning of the logos, I think could be different.
If if we were to flip-flop it, I think you would have to go more side-by-side.
Well, let's take a look at what you could do. Even if Cameron Park is covered by the corner of Cameron of the Cal Fire patch, I think that's livable also.
We'll play around with it.
Yeah, but I would prefer to see Cameron Park on top, Cal Fire below it.
So why don't we come up with a couple of iterations, and then we can also look at other joint operation patches or
sure. Perfect.
Logos to see what it is. We can bring it back.
Well, so here's my only question. Right? Is this something that Mark can email to the two of you and get something back? Because on timeframes, at the rate that we have fire emergency services, I'm hoping to have the fire engine in service by the end of this month, and having nothing on the doors, right? I want to put the whole thing into service and not wait for a month and a half, 2 months to put the engine in service while we're waiting for the next meeting. So if we come up with some ideas, can we get that passed through to email to both of you, say, yeah, we agree, and then move forward instead of waiting until the next meeting?
Well, were we going to bring this to the board? How? I mean, the committee's just a committee. We don't approve things necessarily. We send it on to the board.
In the past, to my knowledge, I don't think we've taken the striping design or those things to the full board. A lot of it's come to the Fire and Emergency Service Committee.
I suggest you bring it to the full board if you want it done right away. We have a meeting in 2 weeks, and we can approve it.
And you could give us the difference.
You can present yeah. the... Yeah, I mean, and I think it's appropriate the board approves changes to the look of our vehicles.
Okay.
So, in this case... Yeah.
That'll be the meeting on the 17th.
I mean, the 17th. You got 2 weeks to get it done. I mean, you should have been done earlier. All right.
So we'll take that as the action.
It would be helpful, too, to where does it look on the door itself, I guess so. Because all we're seeing is the logos without. Where does it look like in the engine, if that were possible?
Okay.
I mean, you could have at least one where it would sit, and you have an idea of what that looks like. It's funny, I've never paid real close attention. Is it centered? Is it high? I don't really remember. Yeah.
Understood.
Okay. Moving on to staff updates, fire department.
So you've got the stats there. Apparatus maintenance and tires, we've got $14,000 remaining in the budget on that. It's sitting at $243,331 for total revenue from fire apparatus rental and swift water rescue team revenue.
Is that to engine, what up to what period of time is that?
Yeah.
That would be up to the last month, correct, Callan?
First quarter?
Yeah, it's fiscal year 26 or 25-26.
Okay. I guess I'm curious about the OES reimbursement, if we should be showing that as revenue in this table.
I believe it says, did it change the reimbursement?
Yes. Right, it shows rescue
oh,
revenue.
Right. Yeah, I'll change the term revenue. I'm going to change that to reimbursement.
Maybe just make it a separate table. My concern is we could be confusing revenue from equipment rental with reimbursement for personnel expenses. It's my concern when we look at this.
Well, so I guess, we can probably figure out a way to do it, but you do get, right, there are... It is all reimbursement, if you look at it, but mm-hmm. there is reimbursement for the equipment mm-hmm. For the swift water rescue team that comes through it. Yes, some of it is 100% personnel reimbursement, but there's also equipment reimbursement with that. That would be similar, like utility 89 goes out mm-hmm. with the swift water gear. We're getting reimbursed for utility 89 just as we would on this line item. So it's just a matter of how you want it portrayed.
My concern is we transfer a certain amount of money into a fund from these revenue streams. Are we putting this $180,000 into our fire fund?
That, I believe, goes into Fund 5, right?
No.
So the 7.
Yes.
Sorry. So the $187,000 is going to a fire fund, but then there's a... See what I'm saying? With the personnel costs, we're paying on this other side. So, and of course, we're paying for expenses on our equipment, too. But we don't view personnel reimbursement as a source of revenue like we do with the equipment rental. And so when we start discussing how much money we actually, you know, it's awkward to me. Mm-hmm. So, all right, enough said.
Although I must say I like the bottom line. It's just how you present it as.
And I think really it's just however this came on because we were asked to track and put it on our reports of where we were at.
Yeah.
So it's really however you all want it, we can display it. That's not a problem at all.
Yeah, I have a hard time articulating it, I guess. But they're kind of two separate things in a way. You know, the personnel costs are, it's almost a direct reimbursement with an administration fee, right?
Right.
Correct.
Versus we have a capital expense that we need to pay back somehow.
Right.
And we do it, the whole methodology, we don't do it with our tax money. We're doing it with these fees to pay for these wildland trucks. Otherwise, we wouldn't have these trucks. We would not have two wildland trucks if we weren't getting reimbursed by CAL FIRE renting these things out. I mean, I don't know how much our engines run during the winter, but it's not very much. And they're not essential to our operations. But they're an excellent piece of equipment to have around, and if CAL FIRE can rent them out enough, that's why we authorized this new engine 3.5 years ago. Was there's a revenue stream coming in to pay for it.
I'll work together and see if we can break it down a little bit, because some of that OES reimbursement is $388 for the wintertime when we OES asks to step up for floods and that. Mm-hmm. So I'll see if there's a way where we can try and better articulate and pull out the personnel cost, and then here's what that revenue piece would be versus the personnel reimbursement going back in.
Yeah, I'm thinking in terms of budget, right? We're going to see a budget here. Hopefully we're going to see a capital budget with equipment in there. How are we paying for it? I mean, I certainly hope there's new equipment. How are we paying for it?
Yeah.
And for these trucks, these wildland trucks, it's been clearly stated in the past that we're paying it for it by revenue from CAL FIRE. Yeah. It's not coming from our tax base. Right. Thank you.
Yep, and then the next thing on there is engine 389 has arrived. We took delivery of it. There's a couple pictures there for you. We took delivery of it last week. And so we'll start the process of getting it outfitted in that. We did have our CAL FIRE mechanics just come over this last week and do a thorough inspection on it. We've got a couple of items to go back to the manufacturer of things that need to be done. But before we started putting equipment in that, we wanted a thorough inspection done to make sure all the items, when we did our field inspection, were corrected appropriately. So that is here. Nice engine. Sid, you say it's not a white one, correct? We made that decision, but I'd say if we had a white one, we'd still be waiting for it. The whole reason we were able to get this is CAL FIRE at the time said, hey, you can't make fire engines for us fast enough, and canceled their orders. Two of them were already 3/4 of the line along the production line. We got offered one. And then CAL FIRE came back and said, hey, we want our engines, and BMA said we already sold them to Shasta County Fire Department and Cameron Park. So overall, very, very happy with
with the engine. Because it was already in production, we got a couple other nice-to-have items on it that were already on it. It's got a 360-view camera system, which was not in our normal spec. That because we took the one off the line, we got it. Much safer for our folks. They can see all sides. And the other pretty neat thing, it was the first time I saw it, is in the cameras, there's speakers. So as your personnel are on the off side of the vehicle, they can talk. The driver hears everything. Now, driving down the road, when you turn your blinker on, we heard every bit of road noise. Because of those speakers in that microphone in the cameras. But pretty neat little additional touch that we would only had a backup camera and got it. Super happy. Hopefully, our goal is to have it in service by July 1 and have it on the market available for rental by then as fire season picks up. And I think that's a pretty obtainable goal. It is the standard CAL FIRE spec, so we know where all the stuff goes. We know where all the mounting brackets go, and the mechanics have a pretty clear plan of where to put everything because it follows that standard across our department.
Do you already possess the things that you have to install? All the
98%, I would say, because it came off of the old 389.
Oh, so you're just moving it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All the BAs, the hose, and that stuff all came off of the old engine. That's still good. We've saved all the equipment that goes with it.
So the $50,000 budget we had for that equipment is only going to be partially used, I can assume.
I'm hoping so.
Okay, great.
We're going to reuse everything we can, and then we'll take a look at it.
Okay.
You know, the picture shows quite a substantial front bumper. I don't remember that on the other engines. Is that a different variation or something like that?
No, still the standard. It's got the two discharges up front, and there's pockets in each front bumper for the hose to lay in.
Okay. It's just the picture shows it.
Yeah, it makes it look a little bit bigger than it
yeah,
really
yeah.
is.
Yeah, it's a beautiful engine, really is.
We had the community event, the Casa El Dorado. Delivering of lunches, the guys at the fire at the station went out and delivered lunches with partnership with CASA. Very successful event, and we've been very fortunate to have CASA as a partner. And go back to Santa Parade, we partnered with CASA El Dorado, and so it's been pretty neat to be part of, you know, have them as a partner and interact with the community and support their organization. The only other thing, you should have seen the significant activity report come out from Mark. We did have a vehicle into the structure right here on the backside of the CSD. The folks in that structure were very, very lucky. The vehicle drove through pretty much the entire building. And came to rest on the back wall. There was a lady that was sitting in a chair that got pushed all the way to the back of the building from there. When the call first came out of the Montessori. That really worried me with a bunch of kids. Luckily, it was at the boutique. Nobody truly critically injured. We were able to extricate the one female patient out of there and then shore up the building with the shoring and turn the building back over. But that was really the other significant activity that we've had recently post-submittal of the report that came out. A pretty significant call, and I think the stars were aligned for a couple of individuals that were in the building that day that did not end up under that vehicle or pushed and trapped against the wall. Significant building damage.
What was the cause of the accident?
Someone was attempting to press the brake and continued to press the gas.
Gotcha.
That happens more often.
It does.
Cameron Park, for some reason.
I get like 2 a year.
Yeah, and we get quite a few vehicles into the structure here more than, I would say, around the county. But
what do you say? Story.
The guys did a really good job, did a good job on the shoring of resupporting the structure and then turning it back over.
So I'm curious about the shoring. Do you have materials at the station that is available to do that? Or
we do. On our fire engines, we have some shoring supplies. For this call, we used Rescue 87 from El Dorado Hills. Was on the initial dispatch when it came into a vehicle into the structure. So we used the supplies off of the rescue there and built the shore.
So you carry materials to do the shoring
there? Yeah, we have 4x4s and...
didn't know. Okay.
2x4s and that. And the rescues, El Dorado Hills has a rescue, and so is Diamond Springs, and they carry additional shoring supplies on both of theirs.
Yeah, I heard the sirens that day. There was a large response. I didn't even see it.
I didn't know what it was.
I heard it.
And then to couple that, right about 5 minutes into that call, there was cardiac arrest right down the street. So you had another larger response going to that at the same time as this. End of report.
All right. Thank you. All right. Alex, you're up.
Sweet. Cool. I think the last time we met, I think, was that in February?
It was.
Well, I recently got married, so that's a highlight.
was it before or after the meeting?
It was after.
Oh, okay.
It was in April. So I had half of April off, so we went on our honeymoon and celebrated with friends. So, but after that, came back in May and pretty much hit the ground running with vacant lot inspections. So I pretty much almost that first week almost got through a lot of them. So I put together sort of like a graph because I've been doing a lot of this stuff like on GIS. So you can let me know if anything needs to be updated. But total parcels I've inspected so far have been 294. We have a total of 369, but a lot of those exist in Silver Springs. So they're sort of on their own timeline because all those parcels are connected. So they're able to do a little bit different things over there. But I've completed 308 inspections so far. There's more to come, so I'm going to be doing a bunch of re-inspections next week. So to sort of break it down, so the way I sort of classify these lots and the inspections, you have developed. So if I come up to the lot, I'm looking to see, all right, there's a structure on it. Cool, it's been developed. Extension requested, that's pretty much if the homeowner has or the property owner has reached out to me and they need more time to complete the work, which is cool because that makes it easier for me, so I'm coordinating with them the whole time. Obviously, a fail inspection, there was a bunch of violations.
What's the typical violations you're encountering?
Grasses and weeds, trees, limbing up tree branches, hazardous vegetation. I mean, that can be sort of classified as kind of all the above on that. And then structures, if there's structures within 100 feet and the vegetation's not clear, that's also a violation on that. But mainly grasses and weeds and the trees. I think I'm keeping track of all sort of the violations coming in, so I'm sort of building a model on my end to see, like, all right, if this inspection fails, what is passing in this inspection and what are people missing? And when I was over at El Dorado Hills, sort of the same trend is kind of happening over here. Well, people are getting the grass and the weeds, but they're forgetting about doing the tree branches because we need those, you know, 6 feet off the ground. And for some reason, that one is, it kind of just always confuses people. And I don't know if that's a contractor thing because I've had some contractors go and do the work, but the people tell me, oh, they didn't say anything about the tree branches, and then they charge them extra for it. So it could be a contractor thing. It could be a property owner not fully reading what needs to be done, which happens a lot more than you think. Because I feel like I'm a teacher and I'm giving all my kids an assignment and people are just not reading it fully at the end of the day. So another thing on here, I added, it's a like fail NTR, which is not on tax roll. So there are properties that are typically... if it's a great example, it is like BLM lands, county-owned land. These are properties that are not on the tax roll, so we're not able to abate them. So we just can't. And it might not always be another agency. It might just be some exempt property.
I don't know why, but I experienced that with the El Dorado Hills, where we got down the road to bait them, and then it turns out we can. So I at least make note of that, where I'm able to just do the inspection. I'll send them a final notice, but it's kind of on them to do it, because I can't enforce anything at that point. But at least I want to note it and show that it's being inspected. There are properties that also have no access, where I'm only able to inspect from the road. I'm not able to, like, walk onto the property. So I'm just noting that as well. That could change, you know, as things get developed or roads get put in. So I'm always making sure I'm tracking that. And then I just have pass and then pass final, the way my system is set up on there. So I'm pretty much trying to track everything and try and get the numbers squared away on that. But a lot of people have gotten in contact me with it, which is good. So fingers crossed this next week, people start to do even more stuff. I do have to send out an abatement notice or an abatement appeal notice. So if they fail that final inspection, I have to send them an appeal notice, and then we would have a special board meeting. You'll be notified of that. So they have 15 days to appeal. If they don't, then we move forward with the abatement. So, and while that's happening, I also have to put together an RPF. So the contractors go out, make bids. So all of this is sort of moving on at the same time. So
we don't have a contractor on board right now for a payment. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
So that we'll have to wait till July, probably at the earliest.
Most likely next week. So when I go out and do the reinspections and I know which lots fail, then I'll be able to put that together.
But we need a contract with an abatement contractor, right?
No, because I'm able to put the RFP together and I send it out and we receive bids back.
And it's not just one, correct?
No, I can go
buy property.
Who's the contract with? The district?
The contract would be with the district and the person that's going to be doing the abatement, and then we would lien the property if we need to. Mm-hmm.
So Mark approves it?
We have a couple of contract templates, so we would get a quote or quote, multiple quotes, and then we would pick the vendor. If it falls within my approval level,
right.
These are typically
$1,500, $2,000.
So my concern would be is if you issue multiple contracts to one contractor, and those add up to more than $25,000.
Yeah, 100%.
So you can't do that.
Yeah, so that would be the next thing where, let's say if it does exceed, then okay, then we got to, or at least then I'm deciding on which lots need to be taken care of, right? Those are the ones.
Well, I mean, couldn't we have a contract that's approved by the board that has enough money in it that the abatements that need to be done are done, and then we do the billing? Just like the RP Mark's putting together.
Right.
Yeah.
Then you have one contract that has, whatever, $100,000 over 3 years. You have the money. You don't have to go through all that. You have one contract. You call up and say, hey, Bob, I need you to go look at this property and give me a quote. And then, boom, you're in there. You don't have to run through all these hoops, multiple contracts. Now, I don't know if we're under obligation to give them three bids or if we just say we're taking care of this with our contractor.
I think we ran into this problem down in El Dorado Hills because they're not an individual project, meaning the district's going to do something. They're all individual projects that we're going to lien specifically for that. So we go out the RFQ for each one of those as an individual project. Now, they can bid on all of them. And they might get two or three or one or two. It's pretty rare they get all of them because they're all over the place. They'll go higher on one and lower on another one. But I think because they're all individual projects, we couldn't just have one vendor do them all.
And I think
I would encourage you guys to talk to council about that because that seems like a huge bureaucratic and administrative burden that if you could find an easier way to do it, you could be more responsive. And you're not going to run into these problems. And, you know, it just cut out a lot of the bureaucracy.
We can certainly run it through our attorney here. That's how we got to that point. We're using the legal that we had down there.
Right.
The general counsel there, but we can run it here.
Yeah, I would encourage you to talk to our, describe the situation, talk to our attorney and see if there's any problem with that, because that's a lot of work.
Yeah, and I think the issue we came across with El Dorado Hill, which here, right, we have two classifications of lots, right? You have under an acre, or if it's under 2 acres, you have to be like fully cleared. If it's over 2 acres, it's a minimum of a 30-foot fire break around the whole edge. So, right, if you get larger properties that fail, that scope of work, one parcel might just...
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's easy to go get a contract increased with the board. Mm-hmm. You just have to schedule it on every month. You have a chance to do that. I mean, otherwise, you're doing a whole separate contract, and if it's over $25,000, you have to come to us anyhow. So, I mean, it's... Yeah.
There may be a way to do some kind of a blanket with a not to exceed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a scope of work and their rates. Yeah. And then they go and say, this is what it's going to take, and they give you a quote based on that. It's just like an on-call contract.
I like it.
There's a reason we're doing it a different way, but I don't know if that was a good reason. So I would suggest you look at it.
We're also more compact than El Dorado Hills. So for one contract, it would not be so difficult. And then secondly, there is some urgency. I mean, we're looking at the fire season coming up with some substantial weed growth all over the place. So it's something we want to move as quickly as we can on.
Well, and there's nothing to prevent you from having multiple contractors who are on call.
Yeah.
Right? You could put an RFP out, get three contractors on board with three contracts, and as long as you don't exceed your budget, you're doing your job. So that's another way to look at it. I mean, so I would just, these separate contracts every time, it's just craziness in a public agency. All right.
I like it. So no, I think, yeah, we'll look into it for sure on that.
Okay.
I think that kind of concludes at least like the unimproved vacant lots. I mean, my phone's ringing all the time, so... I mean, it's great people are being responsive. I mean, I built a kind of a whole community when I was at El Dorado Hills. People got familiar with it, so we're sort of building that back up, because I definitely have some people who be like, oh, we haven't gotten this letter in some time, you know? So it's just building those relationships. I mean, there's some really cool people in the area. I've had some great conversations with folks, so it's definitely nice doing that. When I'm not doing that, I've been helping out the department with Summer Spectacular. I've been helping design some maps for the way vendors are going to be, where the beer garden, different things on that end. So it's cool being able to help out on that side when I'm not doing, you know, fire prevention. So using those skills.
Right.
Silver Springs, obviously we touched on that. So and then just last week, Captain Schwegler and I, with Cal Fire, him and I just did like a little home hardening presentation for Rotary, so that was pretty cool to do. I think we did a decent job, you know. Hopefully maybe we'll be able to come back and, you know, touch on a different subject at some point. And then I actually had sort of like a little Q&A session with a realtor and some other inspectors at Wally's Pizza, because the same realtor, she put on bingo night the other night here. She's trying to get more realtors and homeowners sort of talk about, when I'm doing the defensible space real estate inspection, when a home, you know, needs to sell, or you're selling your home in a high and very high fire severity zone in the LRA, SRA, that's still kind of like a new concept for a lot of folks. So she's trying to spread the word a little bit more, and I've noticed that there's some realtors that maybe only sell a home one time here, and they're either like behind on scheduling their inspection, they've never done it before. So it was cool to sort of, I don't know, at least talk with her and other folks about trying to get that word out. And she's definitely been on it. I worked with her on three other projects, and she's telling the homeowner, hey, you need to do XYZ, because it's like what he looks for on it. So, yeah, sort of cool. Keeping myself busy, but that's pretty much all I got for you. So.
Well, I appreciate the graphics on the pie charts and whatnot. That's the kind of way I visualize things, so I appreciate that work. So thank you for doing that.
And I appreciate the letters, just so we're seeing what the process looks like. Yeah, thanks for including those.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much went in there and did a lot of overhauling on the letters and just trying to keep the language same and similar through that. And the cool thing is, I mean, everything I do out in the field, I'm able to go back to my computer and generate reports for people. So, yeah, trying to get it all dialed in. So, still a lot of learning happening. So,
so the last question, this is probably more for Mark, but our own properties. Have you inspected all our facilities?
So that was actually going to be another topic. I have been working with Danny about getting those properties done. So mm-hmm. we've been working together. I went out and checked some of them out. So him and I, as I said, are working together to get those done. So.
And who are we using? CAL FIRE crews? Who are we using to get us into compliance?
He's been using Growlersburg.
Growlersburg.
Yeah, that's the most economical.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. Although I've seen the goats.
Goats are not cheap.
They've gone up a lot.
I'm sure they have.
They get bricks now. Years ago.
Well, but they do a great job. Like over there, just up the street here, there's that wooded area between the two developments. Mm-hmm. They got in there. And it was, I think, this year was the first year they used them there. And it's fabulous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's limbed up. Those goats go after everything.
They'll go up the trees.
They eat everything.
Well, they do, and it's great. We used them at the landfill, and sheep and goats at the landfill. It was great. But, you know, in some of those tight areas, other things, it might be something that we think about. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we can afford it, but
sponsor goat.
You know, some of these parks really could use that.
Yeah, there are a few of our parks that could use it. You know, the upside of Gateway. Gateway, obviously, most of it we can mow, but you go up in that creek in between the homes, it's narrow. We've thought about it. It'd be something we can look at.
And they pen them in with an electric fence.
Yeah.
So they can contain them as they need to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I okay, thank you.
They've gotten a lot more expensive because the handlers have to have work, rest cycles, brakes, minimum wage, the whole nine yards.
Not the ghost, the handlers.
Not the ghost.
The ghost. They're not covered.
The shepherds.
The shepherd, yeah.
Well, yeah, and
they make quick work, too.
They do.
Yeah, no, it's really effective. I mean, just because they get in where a weed whacker or a chainsaw can.
Well, so, some, yeah.
I say Blackstone and Serrano, have the same guy. He makes like 3 passes throughout the year.
Yep.
It's just like, it just makes sense for them, which is nice because, like you said, they're able to get in the areas other people can't.
Well, they're so. Just between the neighborhood here and the top of the hill. They've been in there.
Yeah, it looks great, though.
Yeah, so, and it's very green. Right? I mean, when we start talking about sustainability, which we don't do very much around here, those are the sorts of programs that check the box.
Maybe we should be looking at our own herd of goats.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
I'm just kidding.
All right.
We could have them roam around the district.
There you go.
We have hard enough time with geese.
All right.
You know, give me an idea there.
All right, last item on the staff update.
Yeah, so the last item at the March 18th board meeting, when we were going through the budget, a comment, I believe Director Israel might have been you, had asked why the firefighter reserve account was almost at 300%.
I was the one, I think, yeah.
Were you the one?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So did a little research for you, just want to report back. So that account, and I had my notes right here. Oops, sorry. This is actually a little bit different number. So the reserve account was, now it's at 308%, but on a budget of 10,000, it was up at 30,000. But it is offset by the OES mutual aid as a reserve. And so I can share this with you. So the offsetting accounts, as we had discussed here earlier, it's accounted for on our revenue line up here under 4261. That's the GL code. So there is an offset to that. So it's one of these things where, yeah, you have a higher than budgeted number, but the good thing is you got higher than budgeted revenue.
Sure, it makes good sense.
Yeah, so it's an offset account, and so that's why that number was high. But it's not disconcerting, actually. It's a a good thing.
Okay.
So, any more questions on that?
No. No. Thank you. That's very clear.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Items for future committee agendas.
What about the public?
I guess so. We'll take public comment on our staff updates.
I've been waiting.
Oh, boy. He's got his hand out.
You ready?
Here we go.
Tim, you made a comment that if it wasn't for the rental agreements on the Type 3s, we wouldn't have Type 3s. My question is, based on dispatch strings to a wildland fire, and we didn't have Type 3, obviously we would send the Type 1s. But because the Type 3s are in our fleet, do they get dispatched? And the Type 1 stays back?
We cross-staffed them.
You cross-staffed them. So they still are beneficial to our initial dispatch strings.
Absolutely.
Okay.
When you said cross, do you mean you send you both units or just one or the other?
One or the other, depend on the call.
Okay.
Vicki.
There wasn't a policy decision made, was there, about only purchasing the type, the wildland fire vehicles if they would be supporting themselves entirely?
I would suggest you read the December of 21 staff report that authorized the purchase of that fire engine.
And it says in there
that
we wouldn't buy this but for...
It says in there it's basically the revenue for purchasing this will be generated by that.
Okay, that's a different thing than saying that we wouldn't buy it but for...
Well, I mean, if we didn't have the money to pay for it somehow, a revenue stream, we wouldn't.
We approved the contract with that knowledge, I think.
I mean, that's the way it was presented to us by staff. Read the report.
Well, I'll have to find it.
It's in there. I just pulled it up.
Okay.
A month or two ago.
And we can't regard that things have changed in terms of fire risk since 2021?
We don't have bottomless pockets.
No, clearly we don't, but I've always wanted to prioritize the fire department, as you know. I mean, I would decimate almost anything else than take something away from the fire department. That's my personal opinion.
Well, we lived for almost a year with only one of them, somehow.
Maybe luck.
Every year
is a different, you know.
Our responsibility is protection of structures, responding to medical emergencies, house fires. We're not wildland fire. That's not our responsibility. That's CAL FIRE. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I believe...
You have local responsibility areas in your district, so that would be the responsibility of Cameron Park Fire.
And the majority of the district is LRA.
LRA.
Local responsibility. Yeah,
there's so much to learn here. I've been meeting for 2 years.
My point is that we made that decision based on historical data that shows that we get a significant amount of revenue from renting those pieces of equipment.
Okay.
That hasn't been the case 2 out of the last 3 years. But if you look at the last 10, it's a cash cow for us. Now, it may not be the right way. If you look at our fire master plan from 2014, it's really clear that it says in there, this isn't the right way to finance your trucks, but it's a good revenue stream. And so it's an accounting effort is what it is, really, in my opinion. We need to find a way that so that our trucks are always funded, either from the general fund, and then rental income offsets that. So there's always the money there to buy that truck when we need to.
All right, but you're saying the general fund does have a responsibility towards...
Well, sure. I mean, okay. And again, I'll say this again. I think there should be a separate fund for fire, where we look at fire as one side of the house and everything else on the other. Now, of course, you can always borrow between the funds or whatever you have to do, but at least there's an accounting that clearly shows there's a revenue stream that comes in and it goes to fire. And like, for example, if this sales tax thing happens in the fall, we're going to have to do that because there's going to be people saying, are you using that money for fire? We're going to have to account. Okay, here's our expenses on fire, and here are the revenue streams, and we are using it.
So, are you teaching that? Like, you're basically treating that like a grant. It's a grant. And at least in my world, then you just account for it that way. You set up a, you know, an account, and you, the money's well, in it. And you,
right now, I mean, the two sides are a little muddled, right? That's always been the problem, right? You guys are always saying that. And I agree with that. It is kind of muddled. I think it'd be a lot, you know, it would separate the two. I'm not saying they're not exclusive of each other, and we could still pass money through if we need to, whatever. But until we really have a clear understanding of what facilities, rec, CCNRs, garbage cost us versus fire, because fire is what, 3/4 of our budget, I mean, I we're going to always be having this argument. And
well,
so
that may be true.
So, I mean, I'm all for the fire department. You know, we need to make good fiscal decisions for our community that result in the best fire department we can have. And
that's very politic, though.
Well, I mean, I'm
the
a
best
terrible
fire
politician.
Department we can have, it could be many things to many.
Yeah, of course.
People, you know, so that's
but
the discussion.
There's limitations to what we can do because we don't have enough money. Right, there's no bottom.
Depending on one's priorities,
there's
yes.
no. There's a limit. There is a limit.
Well, there is an absolute limit in terms of what we bring in, but in terms of where that goes.
Well, but there's other duties that we have other than fire.
Well, there's duties. Yes, we have some statutory, you know, duties.
Well, I mean, we have an obligation to our public to provide other services than just fire.
Well, that you know,
we have obligation though to increase revenue. So. Of this whole operation, I like your idea. There should be two budgets. I've said that for years.
I mean, it would
yeah,
end the
two
argument.
Budgets.
It would end the argument.
Can't be,
and it's
can't
a pain in the ass for staff and accounting-wise, but that's just...
Well, budget hearings come...
Well, effectively, isn't that what we have anyway? The fire department submits the budget. I'm sorry, I'm going on too long.
No, it's okay. No, we do have budgets by department. So Department 3000 is fire.
Yeah.
So we can account for our revenues and our expenses. I think the discussion might evolve into where does that, because there's no, if you will, a bank account for fire versus a bank account for park, rec, CCNRs.
Well,
I personally don't think you can account truly without having two budgets. You know, I've been doing this a long time, and when you talk about the fire money, the equipment money over the years, the group of us that were chasing the money could never find the money because they never would tell us where they put it. So I think really having two budgets is a brilliant idea to put all the questions, you know, at rest. So everybody can see black and white. This is what they have. This is, and just not fire, but you guys too. Like I've asked over and over again,
who's your guys?
Purview, but how much is this building rented out over the weekend? Well, how much are we doing? I'll do that if I can go to Park and Rec. But anyway,
yeah.
I like that idea. Yeah.
Can I have one more comment? Just on the earlier question about the fire report and you know where their money is being put for a variety of things and how they're presenting it. Ultimately, isn't that really the concern of our finance department? Because ultimately, they're the ones who are going to account for that money in our budget so that we can see it. I mean, if they need information from fire in order to do their budget adequately, that's one thing. I don't know that fire is responsible for putting it in a format that's going to be transferred over to the budget department.
Well, I mean, I think our fire personnel have been much more involved with the budgeting process over the last couple of years. I mean, how could we put a budget together without them?
No, yeah, so. I realize that. But in terms of what's really important in the end is that finance get it in the,
in the
situation that is needed, not so much whether it's contained in a particular oral report that's being given.
Well, and strictly from an elected official's position, I view it as, you know, we're the ones that have to make the decision and prove things. That's our responsibility. And if it's not clear or it's muddled, then that's where I have a problem because I'm the one that's responsible for making the decisions,
yeah,
along
say,
with my four other board members.
It's but it's a finance's duty to provide you that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and Vicki, to your point, I think it's really it goes back to that partnership, because Laura is not going to truly understand it. She's getting money in, money's going out, but to some of those questions of the breakdown, I think we're at the point right now, because we're getting ready to enter a new fiscal year, that we can really look. I think it would be a significant amount of time to go back for this last year and try and break that out. But I think moving forward, to pull out the equipment, pull out the reimbursable costs, and then give, hey, here's really what the net positive is in that line, I think that's fairly easy for... Well, it's not
going to
be me, but for Callan.
In the future, not the past. Don't have to drag everything else.
And I don't have expectations for this to happen in this budget cycle. But I just think as we move forward, we, especially if the sales tax thing goes through, there's going to be a significant amount of money rolling in that has to be dedicated to fire. And so we need to be able to show that somehow, along with just answering these lingering questions.
And I don't disagree with you, Tim. It's however you present the numbers, and it's really muddy when you say, hey, we made this much, but we're not showing the money that went out on the other side. And I think we can bring that down fairly easy on our side to give a more accurate number. We're just reporting the total dollar reimbursed, but we're not... reporting what the CSD put out on the front side for them.
So my input would be, I always concerned about replacement of those engines. So we're getting a new engine, but we know at some point we're going to have surplus an engine, or it's reached a point of no return. It's not worth us keeping and maintaining. So it's having those I don't know, 5-year plans or whatever they are, and you do a nice job of presenting that. But that's one of my point of view, those income streams, we need to dedicate those funds to be sure we're in a position to replace, and we know we have to replace because the lifetime on these engines is relatively short. So that's another issue with it. The rental is really nice to make us be able to dedicate funds to do those things.
And we have a plan where there's, was it 180 or 150? What's the amount that's moved into?
129 this year.
129. That's tracked out on our Google Spark, basically capital plan for engine replacements that has that money that puts it into that.
And I'm really reassured by that, because I see a plan in the future to do what we are supposed to do.
So there'll be a new calculation for the new engine that we just got, because it's new. We'll calculate that out, 15 years frontline, 5 years reserve, and then there'll be an annual amount. So that 129 will go up by that amount that we should start putting aside every year.
Yeah, and that'll be part of the capital plan to engage with somebody that's helping with that.
Exactly. Yeah, good.
All right, any further public comment on staff updates? All right. Items for future committee agendas.
I have something. So I looked at my friend AI, and I talked to Alex the other day, and of course I see weeds everywhere, and I know they're not your responsibility, but I'd love to have a marketing plan with lots of little signs that might say something like these. You know, I mean, certainly you can do better than these, but I just love to see them every time there's, here we go, fire hazard, you know? And it would be just, but on little signs that you could put out there with a little stake or whatever, it would be a metal thing, or any of us could put out there, because, and the other part maybe is, I hate to say it, shame or pride, whatever the combination is, pride in our community, save our community, but I'd love to see before that maybe you put some ideas out for signage, so there where it could be maybe some little signs and some banner signs, and banner signs we should get those out as quickly as we can, because we're right moving into the fire season. But little signs that could be easily replicated and fairly inexpensive, and putting some money into this, whether it's $1,000, $2,000 or whatever it would be, education in our community, but to motivate our community. We should just everywhere you go, you see tall grass. And I know your responsibility is those vacant lots, but that leaves most of Cameron Park. Nobody's looking at it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, so just some signage that pretty much kind of like a catchy slogan, you know.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
people
yeah.
see, you know, and sort of, you know, promote, you know, a safer community at that.
Yeah, something safer and fire. That's but a combination of pride and shame, whatever it would be.
Pride and shame.
Shameless pride?
You have to be careful with weed. Because I use weed and Mendocino.
Oh, I know. This is what AI told me. I'm sorry, don't blame it on me. But if as possible, maybe for the next meeting, if you could come up with some ideas.
Yeah.
Or if something, even in the meantime, if you can authorize Mark, that would be nice.
We were already talking about there are a few of those big Cal Fire.
Yeah, they're bigger.
Massive frame boards. A couple of them are empty. And
but I don't know that those are as visible as I'm talking about. Well, I'd like to see it everywhere we could.
Well, not everywhere, but as a starter, we have an empty one right at Rasmussen Park.
Yeah, and there's one, yeah, and a Christy McAuliffe, too, yeah. I think, yeah.
But
like the cyclone fencing there along Christy McAuliffe, things like that.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to get something together on that, so I can easily make something.
And then I wanted to compliment your presentation. Rotary was outstanding, and... Ooh. Way too much technical about roof trusses and eaves and stuff like. I mean, they just went on and on and on. I can't believe it.
That's awesome.
Captain Schwegler pulled out. I think they used that for like one of their classes. On
so you can spend a whole day on roof. Those eaves. Yes.
Yeah, we'll be able to skim through it. But yeah.
Thank really you for that. To, okay.
That's awesome.
Anything else for a future item?
Might not.
Okay, so we'll focus on that.
Items to take to the board. I think our only one is the logo from coming out of this meeting.
At the 17th.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, not for me.
All right, matters to and from. Sid, you got anything for me or for the rest of us?
I think that was. I gave my little pitch here to... market ourselves or mark fire prevention or shame people. Like I said, shame or blame or shame pride. Whatever works.
The carrot and the stick.
Hey, people are already upset they get the sign posted on their property as is. So that's already...
Well, I'm glad that you're doing that because that fits in. We want people to know that you're out doing the inspections. So I like to see that as well.
Well, that also acts as another form of notification in the event, you know, that letter doesn't get out, which is nice because I've gotten returned letters, but someone's like, oh, I saw the sign and I called the neighbor, you know, that person, and they were able to go out there.
The neighbor might be able to apply pressure in a way that you can't.
They're like, oh my gosh, you see that notice he's got? Yes.
They got a ticket.
Yeah. Good job. I was like, yeah.
All right.
That's awesome.
With that said, I think we can move to adjourn.
I so move.
All right.
I'll second that.